Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the deadly, honorable, on-location world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey. This week we're taking a look at Season 5, Episode 4, A Matter of Honor. This episode stars Hey, we're back. This episode stars Ricardo Montalban as a
You'll get there. Listen, I saw him in those pants too.
That's true. It was very distracting. This episode stars Ricardo Montalban as a retired bullfighter who murders one of his employees to preserve his legendary reputation for fearlessness. Montalban was born in Mexico City in 1920 to Spanish immigrants and was a lifelong fighter who pushed to advance the status of Mexican and Latino actors in Hollywood. Montalban was known worldwide for his role as the enigmatic Mr. Rourke on Fantasy Island, a very strange show about a magical island that can grant any fantasy that its guests desire.
Yep.
It was a really weird show.
Super weird. Real creepy, too.
Yeah. Of course, Montalban is also known for his role in the best Star Trek movie, in my opinion, nerds, please don't write in, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, reprising the role of Khan that he originated in the classic series. Also appearing in this episode is Emilio Fernandez, who is one of the best-known actors of early Mexican cinema. In fact, this entire episode features an almost entirely Mexican and Latino cast, and was shot on location in Mexico, marking it in stark contrast to nearly every other episode of Columbo.
That's true. There's we've only had, two other...
On location
shoots, yeah. The Citadel and a cruise ship.
For sure. But as far as like minority representation, this episode is the only one.
Yeah, this is
of this type.
You mean
throughout
like at all?
The entire run, yes.
Oh, boy.
This is the most. I mean, because.
No, I mean, it's on location.
Every non Columbo role is by a Mexican or Latino, for someone who was born in Mexico. So it feels very authentic, I think. And it's rare in a representation kind in that I don't feel that it's exploitative.
Right.
I feel that it actually sort of, and I would love if someone has watched this episode who knows more about Mexican culture than either of us, which would be anybody,
anyone with any knowledge of.
But it feels authentic and not exploitative. Now, the bullfighting thing obviously is a very fetishized thing. In American culture. But at the time in Mexico, it also was a very huge deal. Like, bullfighting for a long time, up until fairly recently, I think was an incredibly popular and bullfighters were revered as celebrities.
Right. It's a blood sport, but at the same time, I mean, it's a blood sport that like has a long and storied history and it wasn't past sort of that event horizon of
it's
maybe not okay for us to mall and
for sure. And I think in showing that part of it, but also in showing the Mexican families as being just being as normal people,
right,
except they're speaking Spanish, is miles ahead of a lot of representation at the time, for sure.
I mean, yeah, like even with the show, it's barely been a few episodes since that uncomfortable one
the Hector Elizondo. And so I think that part of it is fantastic. Also, this entire episode, which seems to have been shot almost entirely in Mexico, there's a couple scenes that are kind of questionable.
Yeah, they're
that
hazy.
That might be sort of suburbs of Southern California. There's a blurry line in that old Spanish style between Baja Mexico and Mexico and Southern California.
Right, Baja California.
California, yes. Baja Mexico is nothing.
Just making the joke it's all.
But I think it's a very great visually and I'm filibustering right now. You're welcome to jump in.
I know. I was trying to figure out was there a reason you felt like you
I just wanted to talk because I really
you just
liked
wanted to
this
get
episode.
That in there.
I just wanted to get that in there.
And I think you're absolutely right. It's a really good episode on its own.
Absolutely.
It doesn't hurt that it is not marred by really questionable treatment of the characters of the material.
We don't have the same quandary that we had in that Hector Elizondo thing where we have to spend the entire time going should we even be watching this?
Let's be real. We spent a lot of time looking at Ricardo Montalban's ass in his pants.
That's true.
And there's holy shit.
Hey, ain't nothing
he's
wrong with
ripped.
That. He's so keeping it tight.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, like when we're introduced to the character, yeah. he is watching an old flick yes. of his own That's bullfights.
It's from a movie called Santa, I believe was the
oh, really?
American name.
Okay.
And it's a Mexican film that was released in Mexico by Columbia. Which sure. is how they had the rights to
throw it in there.
And so it starred Ricardo Montalban from, I believe, the 40s or something like that.
Yeah,
from
had to be
early,
something like
early
that,
days of Mexican cinema.
He was a young man.
He was a young man.
And he was unbelievably beautiful.
I mean, the fact is that Ricardo Montalban has been in amazing shape for his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that when he played Khan, when he had his pecs out, people yep. thought that it had to be a prosthetic, because how could he possibly have a chest
right.
that, like, that...
perfect.
Perfect.
It's okay.
But it's just...
It's a perfect chest.
But it's just... That's all him, man. He just... Yeah. He loved taking care of himself, but not in the... He didn't have that 1970s body that we saw in the... I can't remember the Milo Janus, you know,
the werewolf dude.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Milo Janus, the fitness guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That 70s, like super
jacked.
Buff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he just kept it like tight. I mean, that's really the only way to describe it.
I mean, here's
it.
The thing. You gotta do a lot to put on that kind of muscle.
Yeah.
Like that huge sort of like, I'm a bodybuilder muscle.
Yeah.
But like Montalban, like, was cut.
Yeah.
It's just that he didn't go like above and beyond what is sort of like the classical sort of Greek,
yeah,
you know.
He took care of himself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no other way to put it. He took care of himself.
Listen, folks, when you see him in this episode, you'll get it.
You'll get it. We see.
You'll get it.
But as you're saying, when we are introduced to him, he's watching this old video, but then he's also dressed in a matador outfit
yep.
because he's already in his plan to,
like,
to kill
even though
this
he
bull.
Right, even though he doesn't actually get in the ring and fight anymore.
I think it's like, definitely a part of his plan to give off that impression. So he's dressed in the short jacket, and he's got these incredibly tight pants on.
Yeah, and I didn't know, like, initially I was like, okay, I get it. His suit is kind of inspired by, like, the you know, the matador's you know, outfit. And then it's like, no, it
more
really
like a it's like a pinstripe kind of matador outfit.
Yeah, it's kind of like so it's like a little multi-stripe to it, and then there's like velvet piping on the seams.
It's amazing. Like, all of his costume stuff is amazing in this, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's that. I mean, we're talking about it, so I'm just going to talk about it. Like, later there's that. He has like an action back like suit that is cream. And then there's a shot where we get close enough that I could identify. Like, it is a silk herringbone.
Mm.
Like, man, that is a killer piece, and it is probably definitely his.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other one, yeah, it's probably his too.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
why not?
He looks too good in all of this stuff. Like, I mean, really, he's poured into that matador suit.
Either he pre-owned these things, or the production had them made specifically for him for this episode.
And hopefully he walked away with them.
I would think
he
so.
He probably did.
Who else in the world could wear them?
No.
What would be the point of keeping them on?
They'd be like, yeah, it doesn't look as good on you.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the murder. So we learn at the end, so spoiler alert, I mean, that's this podcast.
right. Spoiler. If you haven't figured that out by now.
So we learn later that that the bullfighter, Ricardo Montalban, his Señor Montoya, he got, there was an incident where a bull broke out of its container.
Right. Like, and it was the crating or something like that.
Yeah.
And the bull broke free.
And it was just the son of Hector, which, what was the son?
Kuro.
Kuro.
Yeah.
Who was there, and he attempted to fight the bull.
Right.
But he wasn't skilled enough. So Hector and Señor Montoya came upon the scene. The official story is that Señor Montoya held the bull off while Hector dragged his son away.
Right.
But the actual story is that that Montoya
froze.
Yes.
And Hector fought the bull.
Right.
And dragged his own son away.
Right. He did basically everything.
Yeah.
And sort of the premise of this episode is that this man's entire life is built on his bravery, and that's built from the very beginning when you see him watching the old video, right. Or the old film. It's all about presentation and style and his right. image.
And his image and his pride
yeah.
and his sense of honor.
So he sets up the scenario where he's going to fight. He says he's going to fight the bull.
Well, he tells Hector what he does is he gives his whole staff the day off.
Right.
Sends them home at noon.
Except for the one ranch hand who he sends right. far out.
Miguel, I think.
Possibly.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I wrote it down somewhere.
I'm going to get that.
No, I didn't, because I was distracted by the cream action back suit.
Oh, well, I understand. We were all distracted by it in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... No, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So he sends Miguel basically to the other side of the ground, so he won't be anywhere near the practice ring.
Right.
And then he tells Hector, hey, listen, I'm going to kill this bull because your son's going to come back and he's going to want to fight this bull again and right. it'll murder him. So I'm going to do this. And the whole time Hector is like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
You're not going to do
like,
that.
He's also like, my son isn't that stupid. We actually right. learn later that his son is absolutely that stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as he gets out of the hospital, Columbo has to basically like physically stop him from trying to fight the bull.
Which is also one of those things where it's like, I wonder how much of that is exacerbated by the fact that the bull mauled his dad.
Yeah, but yeah. I think probably he still would have done that.
But
he
there's
definitely,
definitely
seems like a hothead.
Truth to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the sort of reveal at the end about Montalban, you know, about Montoya
yes.
Being, you know, just stock still, you know, frozen in terror at
right.
being in the ring with a bull again.
Yeah.
Like it sort of sheds an interesting new light on that conversation with Hector when
right.
when Hector is like, you're not going to kill the bull. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Basically because he's like, you're not going to get in the fucking ring with that bull. Like,
well, Hector,
I saw you just, you know, shit your pants over it yesterday.
Right. And Hector is packing to leave.
Yeah.
And we have to assume this is because he has lost faith in this man. Like, it's interesting because Hector has to leave because he knows the secret.
Yeah.
And either he can't work, like Montoya couldn't stand having him around, or he couldn't. It's not clear exactly which, but I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Montoya asks him about it, and it has the vibe of Hector saying, I have to leave.
I have to go.
I have to leave without putting in, basically, while sort of sidestepping the, I have to leave because I don't respect you anymore.
Right. But that's element of what's happening. Yeah. And because his fear, his new fear has hurt his son, I think that being there would just be a reminder that he's not the great man he was anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because of this, knowledge that he kills
Hector. Yeah.
And in the context of this episode, he is correct in that as soon as people find out he's afraid, his life is over.
It's over. Yeah, yeah.
Because this episode does not end with him being found, like some sort of Columbo doesn't figure out some sort of crazy thing that he uses to convict
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Can we just skip to talk
Let's
about
talk about
the
it.
Catch?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
It's because it was so like they just okay. So I mean the setup is basically that when Columbo goes to like stop Kuro from, you know,
facing the bull.
He's basically like, listen, I know that Montoya killed your dad.
I can't prove it,
but yeah. there's a lot of stuff I have about it. Please just trust me and hear me out on this. And then they cut to basically the thing, which is they go to the ranch, and Kuro is already out there about to fight the bull, and Montoya, like, basically they all rush over, and Montoya goes into the ring to dissuade him. At which point, Kuro runs and releases the bull and hides.
Yes, leaving he gives the cape and the sword mm-hmm. to the Muleta, I believe is the name for the
cape.
That's
it. Yep.
And he gives them to Montoya mm-hmm. and he releases the bull and hides, basically like showing like challenging him to
fight the bull. Yeah.
Which we know that he's injured and it would be difficult for him to fight the bull, but for a seasoned bullfighter like him, he could at the very least
Right. Deal he could with handle it. Himself. He could handle himself long he probably enough to get help.
He probably couldn't fight it in a way to like defeat it
right.
in the way that he could previously, but he could definitely survive out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of his wound and because of his years of not playing, we don't know exactly why. Yeah,
that's not explained, and it doesn't have to
be. And it's not important.
Yeah.
He now has the fear, he has the fear, and when everyone sees that,
yeah,
that is the end of him.
Yeah. Like, at that point, when he sort of comes out of his revelry of terror, he says not a word.
Well, that's not true.
He
does. He's two ranch hands come over to sort of help him out of the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And he yells at them in Spanish. We don't speak Spanish.
Right.
But he yells at them in Spanish, basically, to say, like, get off me. Who do you think you are? That kind of thing.
Right. Basically, in the I'm not an invalid kind of reaction.
And then he just walks over to the police car, doesn't turn and look at even his daughter calls out to him. He doesn't look at her. He simply gets in and is driven away.
The only thing he does is he hands over the muleta and the sword to
Columbo. Essentially,
basically
resigning.
As a sort of nod to you've bested me.
Right. Yeah. I think it's great because it is really like he is defeated in that moment.
Yeah.
Whether or not they actually manage to convict him of murder, he is defeated.
Well, it's also like, to me, I really appreciated how long they let you sit with it before Columbo just lays it out for you. Here's what I found. Here's how I knew.
It's after the cop car is driving away.
Yeah.
It's on the way out, and Montoya's gone and out of the story.
And he's just relaying to, you know, his buddy cop.
Yeah, we've talked about like the lack of a falling action in some of these where they get right up to the point where Columbo just says, gotcha.
Yep.
And then it stops.
This
is not that. And it's so much better for it in the way that the John Cassavetes like slow walk out of the,
absolutely.
That sort of thing. This is more on that where a man is caught, he knows it. Mm-hmm. And then we're allowed a little bit more to kind of feel it and understand it.
Yeah. I think that is one of the things that really makes this episode shine.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great moment of kind of all of the pieces kind of falling into place, you know, at the very end of it, but also just that we get to see Montalban process.
Right.
How far he's fallen.
And I think it's a testament to the writing about how much of this episode is hinges on technical details of bullfighting.
Yeah.
And how legible it is to people who do not know about bullfighting.
Right. Well, there's a moment where Columbo is basically harassing him in his office, like with the, you know, like the business books and everything.
Yes, he's looking at the tranquilizers that he used and that kind of thing.
And Montoya basically, in a moment of frustration, essentially yells, anybody who had the most passing familiarity with bullfighting would not be questioning this.
Right.
Which is, of course, the whole, you know, that's the whole point of the episode is Columbo doesn't know anything, so he
But he's got looks this book. Everything. He's also, there's a lot of, like, dialogue.
Right, so he digs, but it's the, like, because he wasn't baked in familiar with it, he didn't go, oh yeah, that checks out.
Yeah.
Like everyone else does.
It's we should talk a little bit about the premise. So this episode takes place in the fiction of the episode. It takes place entirely in Mexico.
Right.
Columbo is there on vacation with Mrs. Columbo.
Mm-hmm. Once again, who is never seen.
Yeah, no, she's not actually in this episode, but she's at the hotel.
Right. She's in proximity to this episode.
Yes, she goes back to Los Angeles after a while. This episode starts, introduces Columbo by having him rear-end another car in a slow, in a slow motion.
Another car that is more or less parked.
Yes. Then there's this sort of huge commotion.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really like in this episode is it kind of does the Hunt for Red October thing.
Oh,
People who speak the same language are speaking to each other in Mexico, like when Montoya talks to Hector.
To Hector or to anybody else,
right,
like
and
before Columbo shows up.
Columbo is not there. They're speaking English. And I think we're meant to understand that they would actually be speaking Spanish.
Yes.
But I think there's a great thing that whenever Columbo is there and people are speaking to each other that would be speaking Spanish to each other, they right. speak Spanish.
They speak Spanish, and it is not subtitled.
It's not subtitled, and I think that's actually really great.
Yeah, because it's fantastic.
It definitely makes you feel, it makes you feel in a place like you're in Mexico.
Right.
Like you are with Columbo on this thing, but then also the legibility of having the actors, even though it doesn't make any sense for them to be speaking English to each other, but having them speak English in those scenes where you would need to know what they were saying.
Right, right. Rather than force you to read through the entire episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's actually really great.
Yeah, it's a smart way to manage it.
And it, for sure. And it didn't feel distracting too. Like it definitely felt, no. it definitely helps like build. Yeah, I think this is a really great episode.
It's so good. Yeah. I mean, and most, I mean, the episode, okay. Sorry, let no, me start again. No, I think it's a well-written episode.
Yes.
I think it kind of keeps, I mean, it kept me on the hook through the whole episode. There was no point where I was like, oh, this is really starting to drag.
No, it's remarkably yeah,
it's surprisingly tight.
Yeah.
For 70s.
Yes.
But
for Columbo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely for Columbo.
There aren't any, we don't have really a red herring plot.
Yeah.
Even the car crash thing is taken care of off screen. Yeah, we don't really have to think about it.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. None of that stuff kind of gets in the way. And there's no big, like, there's none of the weird, like, comic relief moments.
No. Anything? I mean, other than just, like, Columbo drinking some mezcal.
And then spitting it
and
out,
then spitting
sure.
It out.
Yeah,
but there's,
that's, yeah. But it's integrated in a way that so many of them have not been before. Like, it's really well written. And, and the reason that I paused to accent that is because, it is also lifted up by the fact that Ricardo Montalban is.
I mean, I would say that everybody in this is doing a fantastic job.
They're all great, but man, Montalban is doing fantastic. I could just sit and watch him react and just glare at Columbo all day long.
Oh yeah,
because like he's so good at those like micro expressions.
Oh yeah,
like watching him and. Just like when he would narrow his eyes, or in a lot of cases when his eyes would already be narrowed, and then when he was like, oh, I have to respond and I have to be magnanimous, you could see the shift in him. And it was just like, and none of it was, for a man whose style of acting is so big, none of it was like, let me draw all this attention to what I'm doing with my face. He was just kind of getting on with being...
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it while we were watching it. I think his great strength is that he can make the impossible seem natural. Like, he makes an emotive mood that if most actors tried, you would think, this is insane.
No,
like,
you
why
can't,
would you act this large?
No, you can't sell that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But he makes it seem like a natural human being.
Yeah.
To do these large... speeches, and he monologues, and he goes into he will talk and look into the far distance.
Yeah,
and
but none of it feels forced
no,
or staged.
It feels
like
really great.
It legitimately feels like if you met this guy, you'd be like, "Yeah, that checks out." I've certainly met people who are this full of themselves, you know. But like, I mean, none of them are quite that handsome. But you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, it's really remarkable. Like
I mean, Ricardo Montalban seems to have been a fantastic dude. I mean, and rest in peace. He left us in 2009. Just like an amazing actor. Another link to the Planet of the Apes. He was in Escape from the Planet of the Apes. I can't remember which one. It's whichever one has Roddy McDowall playing the son of his previous character.
My God.
He plays the owner of Roddy McDowall before the Ape Uprising.
Oh.
Those movies get a little weird.
Okay, well, in fairness, the thing that popped into my head about Ricardo Montalban was when he was the fucking villain in Freakazoid.
Sure, absolutely.
Because it's very rare
that
you hear someone like Ricardo Montalban go, "No, you are the weenie." I mean, and so that's just burned into my brain.
He's so good. He has such a distinct style and voice, and he can only be him. And I it's well known my love of.
I know how much
Khan.
You love Wrath of Khan.
I love Wrath of Khan,
and you're not wrong.
I think it's the perfect Star Trek movie as far as Star Trek movies go. I don't think there will ever be a better one.
Don't add us. Mac is right.
I'm right
it's
about
the best.
It's the best one. I just think he has such style, swagger, and believability in unbelievable moments. And you'll let him play a Sikh Indian man because it's like, oh, what the hell? It's Ricardo Montalban. Oh God,
did he do that?
Yeah, I mean, no, okay. One of the things, I mean, we can talk about it.
No. I just like I don't have
in the original Star Trek, they put like brown makeup on his face to make him a little darker.
Oh, I see.
And then later when it went into the Wrath of Khan
film, they were like, oh no, let's just
normal skin tone.
Let's just not.
But he definitely was supposed to be Sikh Indian in the first.
Real glad they didn't do that with Benedict Bumbersnatch.
Yeah, or, I don't know what happened in that. I'm not sure how we got from Khan to just like a white
right,
guy.
From Khan to Khan?
Yeah.
Question
I guess
mark?
When they supposedly gave him reconstructive surgery, even though he's a... I don't want to get into why Into Darkness is so terrible. That's for...
No, I just wanted to poke the bear.
I've seriously been writing a Wrath of Khan YouTube thing for like 6 months now, and I should probably just record it at some point.
Yeah, well, definitely before this episode goes out.
Oh, no.
No pressure.
Oh, no. So, I think he's great, and obviously he elevates this material, but every single... I'll
tell you what, he elevates that suede vest he was wearing.
He's elevating, he's elevating something, you know what I'm saying? No, I think he does great, and I think everybody does great. I think the commission, the commandant.
The commandant's actually he's
really
wonderful.
Fantastic, yeah. and his family and the Miguel and Hector is just in a couple scenes.
Also, shout out to all the people who are just going about their own day living, who basically stopped.
You can
to
tell,
just
yes.
stare. At,
you can
at
definitely
the film
tell
crew.
That this was filmed on location in Mexico because they did not have control of that.
Oh, no.
That plaza that they were filming in.
Nope.
Every single shot, there is just a line of people in the background staring. Dead, like barrel into
directly
the
into the camera
every
Absolutely.
Single time
because you know, like it wasn't just a camera, it was like a camera and the whole crew behind it.
Yeah.
So, literally, they're
I mean,
all
it was,
just
it, I, it's definitely very interesting. And to this day, that still happens in movies.
I was gonna say, listen, not, I would do it
it's
if
not,
I was not shooed off a set,
it's not completely you know out of there, but
no,
but
it's not bagging
is,
on them, it's just laughing at
just,
the fact that
I mean,
like,
they very clearly could not. Work with local authorities to clear this. Like they wanted people in this plaza, and what they got was essentially just a line of people staring into the camera.
I'm sure there was probably also an element of, well, we could work with them, or we could do this really cheaply.
Yeah,
maybe not strictly above board.
I think another really great thing about this episode is the scenery. That plaza is shot really beautifully.
The ranch
the
that
ranch
they shot on
as well,
is
yeah.
stunning, and the house is unbelievable.
It had to be shot in Mexico. Because this ranch that has the bullfighting ring and all of this stuff had to be on location because it doesn't exist in the United States.
Yeah, it would have been so much effort for them to set that up versus just literally crossing the border and you know paying somebody to use their ranch.
I'm sure it's very cheap to film. It was very cheap to film in Mexico in the 1970s.
Probably.
I don't know. Yeah.
We're not magicians.
We don't know anything. If anything, this podcast has proven how the vast limits of our knowledge.
Here's a real twist. If you've made it to this episode and haven't figured that out by now.
Yeah.
I think you're one of us.
And if this is your first episode,
sorry,
I don't know.
Yeah,
no, it's a great episode. I would say
no. It's a very good. It's a very good episode of Columbo.
Of Columbo for sure. And I also liked how frizzy Columbo's hair. This is another episode of where Columbo's hair is very obviously affected by the heat.
Uh huh. Completely out of control.
He has that cloud again. It's back.
Yep. But he's really good in man, it's a good episode.
It's a really good episode.
It's a good dang episode.
A lot of good performances.
Yeah.
We already talked about fashion.
Yeah, no, we hit that right out of the bat.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to add.
No,
man.
I think you should definitely watch this episode 100%. I would say this is not a skip. This is a must see.
No,
if you're going through this season, definitely watch this one.
Yeah.
This is a
good one. I mean,
I'd say probably one of the best of that we've seen so far.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like I'll definitely go back and watch Patrick McGoohan chew on the scenery.
Sure.
But Montalban's moved his way up to the front of that list, I think.
Yeah.
Like
I
it's
mean,
just so, I could just watch him.
There's imagery in this one that's going to stay with me. And I think that his performance this was a role he was built play, and absolutely. And he's so good opposite Columbo. It's a shame that he never came back and did anything else, because he's so perfect at, in that Robert Culp, in the famous Robert Culp style of irritated but also magnanimous but also incredibly full of himself. Yep. Just a really perfect sort of
it's the exact cocktail you want in a Columbo villain.
Absolutely. So I would recommend this episode 100%.
Yeah, get out there. Go get it.
Trust me.
It's worth it.
Get all up. Get
even
it going.
Even if it means you get another episode, hey, I mean, the last one wasn't too bad.
No.
And I don't know about the next one. You know.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's take a look.
Whichever one it winds up being on a disc with, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
Even if it's not great, you still have this one.
Oh, well, actually, the next episode, we're going to see another returning villain. We've got Jack Cassidy back again.
Oh, shit.
As the great Santini. Not that one.
A different, right.
But and in the episode, season 5, episode 5, Now You See Him.
So it's going to be about stage magic.
Indeed it will, yeah.
Can't fucking wait. This is going to be weird.
Magicians, well known for not being weird creeps. Not going to touch that one?
Nope.
I'll say it.
Nope.
I don't care. Come at me, magicians. What you going to do? Make a coin appear out of my ear? I don't give a fuck. Can't make me disappear. This is a challenge to any magician.
Max putting y'all on blast.
That's right.
Magic Castle, y'all can fuck yourselves.
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't get
no,
the ma-
no,
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 I don't want...
too late now.
I'm going to hear that, like, that piano is going to come get me.
Yep.
The piano that plays itself.
You're just going to cut all of this out.
That's
now.
Right. They're going to saw me in
please,
half. For
seriously,
real.
Seriously, though, please don't hurt my co-hosts.
Fine.
I mean, wait for us to finish, I guess. No, really though, don't hurt Mac. I like Mac.
It's fine. Do what you gotta do, magicians. Come at me. Right here. All right. So that's gonna do it. That's gonna do it for this week. this has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And one more thing, sir.
God, what?
I don't know. did not write an episode. We're just gonna go out on that. I don't care.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Hey.
Bye.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.